for news and information.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The U.S. is blasting a move by the world's top criminal court to seek arrest warrants for Israeli leaders and leaders of Hamas, a U.S.-designated terrorist group. AP correspondent Sagar Magani.
Among those Karim Khan wants to charge,
the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
Here in Washington,
the United States fundamentally rejects the announcement today.
As the president said, is outrageous.
Both State Department spokesman Matthew Miller and White House National Security spokesman John Kirby ripped the move.
There should be no equivalence between Israel and Hamas.
A three-judge panel will decide whether to issue the warrants. But even if they are issued, since Israel is not a member of the court, neither Netanyahu nor his defense minister face any immediate prosecution risk. Sagar Magani, Washington.
U.S. counterterrorism official speaking in Qatar Monday said that the Hamas surprise attack inside Israel that launched the current war in Gaza has upended the U.S. strategy in the Middle East, and its implications are reverberating globally.
Speaking at the 2024 Global Security Forum in Doha Monday, director of the U.S. National Counterterrorism Center, Christine Abizad, called the Hamas attack one of the most consequential terror attacks since the September 11, 2001 attacks on the U.S., and it has changed the way the Counterterrorism Center does its job. She said it is a reminder they have to stay focused on the global threat environment.
It reminds us whether you're focused on the Iran threat, the Al-Qaeda threat, the ISIS threat, the lone actor threat, the racially or ethnically motivated violent extremist threat, the anti-institutionalist, anti-government threat. All of these threats exist all at the same time, and we have to be vigilant.
Jeff Custer, VOA News.
And more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Haiti's main international airport reopened Monday for the first time in nearly 3 months after relentless gang violence forced authorities to close it. The reopening of the airport in the capital Port-au-Prince is expected to help ease a critical shortage of medications and other basic supplies. The country's main seaport remains paralyzed. Gangs control about 80% of the capital. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky told Reuters in an exclusive interview Monday his Western allies are taking too long to make key decisions on sending military support to Ukraine. Reuters correspondent Chris Dignam.
Every decision takes ages. We arrive at this decision later on, but it's like 1 year too late.
Zelensky also said he was pushing Western partners to get more directly involved in the war by helping to intercept Russian missiles and to allow Ukraine to use Western weapons against enemy military equipment at the border and further inside Russian territory. The United States has resisted Ukrainian calls to use its missiles against internationally recognized Russian territory, reflecting concerns in the West about the risk of escalation.
The Environmental Protection Agency warns that cyber attacks against water utilities around the United States are becoming more frequent and more severe. The agency Monday issued an alert urging water systems to take immediate action to protect the nation's drinking water. The EPA said about 70% of utilities inspected by federal officials over the past year violated standards meant to protect cyber attacks. They cited basic errors such as failing to change default passwords or cut off system access to former employees. EPA says nations including Russia, China, and Iran are actively seeking the ability to disable critical U.S. infrastructure. Many water systems have modest staffing and resources to harden themselves against attacks. More from Reuters' David Doyle on former South African President Jacob Zuma being disqualified from running for a seat in parliament in next week's national election because of a previous criminal conviction.
This was a closely watched decision because of its potential to influence the outcome of the vote. Zuma, who was forced to quit as president in 2018, has fallen out with the governing African National Congress. Instead, he's been campaigning for Umkhonto we Sizwe, a new party named after the ANC's former armed wing. Opinion polls suggest the ANC's majority is at risk for the first time in 3 decades. And MK, as it's known, is a threat, especially in Zuma's home province of KwaZulu-Natal.
That's Reuters' David Doyle reporting. You'll find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
warrants requested at the International Criminal Court for Hamas and Israeli leaders.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Minister of Defense Yoav Gallant bear criminal responsibility.
Microsoft introduces a new category of personal computers with artificial intelligence.
We're entering this new era where computers not only understand us, but can actually anticipate what we want and our intents.
And a spoon that makes low-salt food taste saltier.
Researchers hope it can help users cut down on sodium consumption and promote a healthier diet.
Today is Tuesday, May 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, his defense chief, and three Hamas leaders for alleged war crimes have been requested by the prosecutor at the International Criminal Court.
I have reasonable grounds to believe, on the basis of evidence collected and examined by my office, that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Minister of Defense Yoav Gallant bear criminal responsibility for the following international crimes committed on the territory of the State of Palestine from at least the 8th of October, 2023. The crimes include starvation of civilians as a method of warfare, willfully causing great suffering, serious injury to body or health or cruel treatment, willful killing or murder, and intentionally directing attacks against a civilian population, as well as crimes against humanity of extermination and or murder, persecution, and allegations of crimes of committing other inhumane acts.
As for the Hamas leaders,
there are reasonable grounds to believe that these three Hamas leaders are criminally responsible for the killing of Israeli civilians in attacks perpetrated by Hamas and other armed groups on the 7th of October, 2023, the taking of hostages, and the other crimes alleged in our applications.
A panel of judges will consider the prosecutor's evidence and decide whether or not to issue the arrest warrants and allow a case to proceed. Reaction was swift. Prime Minister Netanyahu.
The outrageous decision by the ICC prosecutor, Karim Khan, to seek arrest warrants against the democratically elected leaders of Israel is a moral outrage of historic proportions. It will cast an everlasting mark of shame on the international court. Israel is waging a just war against Hamas, a genocidal terrorist organization that perpetrated the worst attack on the Jewish people since the Holocaust.
U.S. President Joe Biden also lambasted the prosecutor and supported Israel's right to defend itself against Hamas. So let's go deeper on this. Joining us now to talk about this is Douglas Castle, who specializes in business and human rights, international human rights law, and international law for King and Spalding. So, what are your initial thoughts about the ICC prosecutor's decision?
Well, I think what was very smart, both politically and legally, about Karim Khan's decision was to announce the arrest warrant request for the Israeli leadership and the Hamas leadership at the same time. If he had done only one and not the other, there would be lots of reasons to wonder why that would be. But since there is sufficient evidence, in my judgment, to justify an arrest warrant against both sets of leadership, it was important that everyone know that he was investigating both cases at the same time.
So a lot of people here in the United States, politically and in Israel, you know, are either feigning shock or are shocked that these arrest warrants were asked for. But you say you think there's evidence. Can you walk us through that?
The International Criminal Court has jurisdiction over war crimes and crimes against humanity, as well as a couple of other crimes. And these arrest warrants are reportedly for war crimes and crimes against humanity. The the primary areas of inquiry, if I were the prosecutor, which of course I'm not, would be the number of civilian casualties in Gaza is extremely high, and the issues of getting humanitarian aid to those civilians in Gaza have been very, very significant. So that doesn't mean that either Mr. Netanyahu or his defense minister are guilty of war crimes or crimes against humanity, but both situations certainly raise questions enough that it seems to me an arrest warrant is justified.
What happens next? Let's say that the court agrees and they issue the arrest warrants. What happens next?
Probably nothing. Israel is not a party to the International Criminal Court, so Israel has no obligation to turn over its senior officials to the ICC. What could happen, however, is that if Mr. Netanyahu or the defense minister were to travel outside Israel to any one of the more than 100 countries, I think the right number is 124 approximately of the 193 UN member countries. If they were to travel to any one of those countries, those governments would be under an obligation as parties to the International Criminal Court to detain Mr. Netanyahu and the defense minister and to turn them over to the ICC. Now, in the past, when heads of state or government in other countries have been indicted or an arrest warrant's been issued by the ICC, and they did travel to countries which were parties to the ICC, they were, in fact, not arrested because and turned over to the ICC, because that is a huge political and diplomatic step for a government to take. But nonetheless, you can't rule out the possibility that that would happen. So it would mean that both senior officials would have to be careful about their travel plans and to get good intelligence before they go to another country as to whether that country would be prepared to arrest them.
Thank you so very much for the time.
You're quite welcome.
Douglas Castle with King and Spalding. Food and medicine for Palestinians in Gaza piling up in Egypt because the Rafah closing remains closed, and there's been no aid delivered to a UN warehouse from a U.S.-built pier for 2 days. UN officials warned on Monday there were insufficient supplies and fuel to provide any meaningful level of support to the people of Gaza. We're following these other stories from around the world. Haiti's main international airport is reopened for the first time in nearly 3 months after gang violence forced authorities to close it. The reopening is expected to help ease a critical shortage of medications and other basic supplies. A would-be prince, a former judge, a parliamentarian, and retired military officers among 9 alleged conspirators who stand trial on Tuesday for a suspected Reichsbürger plot to overthrow Germany's democracy. Ford Motor Company said on Monday it backs the Biden administration's moves to dramatically cut vehicle emissions through 2032, rejecting Republican arguments the new climate rules are bad for business. The second largest U.S. automaker said it supports the Environmental Protection Agency's regulation, announced back in March, to cut passenger vehicle fleet-wide tailpipe emissions by nearly 50% by 2032. Continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, guns have divided American voters with nearly equal numbers taking opposite sides in the gun safety debate, according to Pew Research polling. U.S. presidential candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump also have opposing views on guns and gun control. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns takes a look at this for us.
Nearly a third of Americans say they have a gun, according to the Pew Research Center. It's a constitutional right that often becomes a political issue for presidents when there are school shootings, including this one at a Florida high school in 2018, which ended with police evacuating students hiding in their classroom. Then President Donald Trump met with families of the victims to talk about gun violence.
It's been going on too long, too many instances, and we're going to get it done.
As president, Trump's gun policies focused mostly on strengthening school security, including suggesting that teachers be armed. As a presidential candidate, Trump told the nation's top gun lobby Saturday that guns are vital to personal safety.
Our country is going to hell. Rapacious gangs and ruthless criminals are terrorizing our streets, and crooked Joe Biden's weakness has us teetering on the edge of World War III.
Accepting the National Rifle Association's endorsement, Trump said Biden is trying to, quote, rip firearms out of the hands of law-abiding citizens and gut gun rights guaranteed in the Constitution's Second Amendment.
We have to have a Second Amendment that's meaningful. If we don't, we're going to have levels of death and destruction like this country has never seen before.
When a teen gunman killed 19 children and two teachers at a Texas elementary school in 2022, President Biden said, quote, we have to act.
As a nation, we have to ask, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name we do what we all know in our gut needs to be done?
The White House and Congress agreed on a bipartisan plan expanding background checks for younger gun buyers and helping states remove firearms from people who pose a danger to themselves or others. Biden is campaigning on those tougher laws, especially in communities marked by gun violence.
I signed the most significant gun safety law in nearly 30 years, which I know matters to the community that I mourn with. And I remember in Atlanta, Half Moon Bay, and Monterey Park.
There's been no further gun control legislation since Republicans won control of the House in 2022. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries blames Trump supporters.
Today, the MAGA extremists in the do-nothing Republican Congress are leaving town without meaningfully addressing the gun violence epidemic in America.
U.S. voters' views on guns divide largely along political lines, with Pew Research data showing Republicans and Republican-leaning independents are more than twice as likely to own a gun as Democrats and Democratic-leaning independents. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
A fight over space-based weapons in the United Nations on Monday.
Just last week, on May 16, Russia launched a satellite into low Earth orbit that the United States assesses is likely a counter-space weapon presumably capable of attacking other satellites in low Earth orbit. Russia deployed this new counter-space weapon into the same orbit as a U.S. government satellite.
It's an allegation that Russia has denied. Western allies are taking too long to make key decisions on military support for Ukraine. That's what President Volodymyr Zelensky told Reuters in an exclusive interview in Kyiv on Monday. Reuters correspondent Chris Dignam gives us the details.
Every decision takes ages. We arrive at this decision later on, but it's like 1 year too late.
Zelensky also said he was pushing Western partners to get more directly involved in the war by helping to intercept Russian missiles and to allow Ukraine to use Western weapons against enemy military equipment at the border and further inside Russian territory.
We can have a proper dialogue and we can reach the consensus as regards hitting the long-range missiles to hit the weapons of Russians located alongside with the Ukrainian border. I believe we will reach this decision because the same happened with giving us tanks and armored vehicles, Patriots, right?
The United States has resisted Ukrainian calls to use its missiles against internationally recognized Russian territory, reflecting concerns in the West about the risk of escalation.
Everybody's afraid of escalation. So, Ukrainians are dying. Well, everybody got used to that. That's not escalation.
Zelensky's remarks come at a perilous time for his forces. They are outnumbered and outgunned by Russia's army, which recently crossed the border into the city of Kharkiv.
Reuters correspondent Chris Dignam. Today's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. Microsoft on Monday debuted a new category of personal computers. It has artificial intelligence features built in. Microsoft rushing to build the emerging technology into its products across its business to compete with Alphabet and Apple.
This in turn will lead to a new category of devices that turn the world itself into a prompt. Devices that can instantly see us, hear, reason about our intent and our surroundings. For us, this vision starts with our most beloved and most widely used canvas, Windows. And it's why we are introducing an entirely new class of Windows PCs engineered to unleash the power of distributed AI across the edge and cloud. We call this new category Copilot Plus PCs.
The NASDAQ closed at a record high on Monday, while the S&P 500 gained slightly as technology stocks advanced ahead of NVIDIA's highly anticipated earnings, and investors gauged the timing of an interest rate cut by the Federal Reserve. More on this now from Reuters correspondent Lisa Bernhard.
But gains weren't seen across the board. The Dow shed about 0.5%, the S&P 500 ticked up nearly 0.1%, and the NASDAQ gained more than 0.6%. The S&P's technology index, up more than 1%, outperformed the S&P's other major sectors, boosted by chipmakers such as NVIDIA, which added nearly 2.5%. Investors will look for evidence in NVIDIA's earnings on Wednesday that the AI chip leader can maintain its explosive growth and stay ahead of rivals. Ross Mayfield is investment strategy analyst at Baird.
It's obviously the most important stock in the world right now, I think, given the importance of the AI narrative to the rally over the last 12 to 18 months. So should it hold so much import? You can make the argument it should. I mean, it's the theme of the next 5, 10, 50 years is AI, and they are kind of the fuel to that fire.
Also on Wednesday, minutes of the Federal Reserve's latest monetary policy meeting are scheduled to be released. A solid earnings season and signs inflation may be starting to cool again have reignited hopes for Fed rate cuts this year, pushing Wall Street's indexes to record levels. The recent rally has started to raise concerns about stock valuations, with the S&P trading at a forward price-to-earnings ratio of 20.8, well above its historic average of 15.9, according to LSEG data. But the Dow on Monday was weighed down by a 4.5% drop in J.P. Morgan shares after CEO Jamie Dimon said he was, quote, cautiously pessimistic about the bank's net interest income. In other company news, shares of Johnson Controls International rose more than 2% following a report activist investor Elliott Investment Management built a position worth over $1 billion in the building solutions provider. And Norwegian Cruise Line shares surged more than 7.5% after lifting its annual profit forecast.
Reuters correspondent Lisa Bernhard. ChatGPT maker OpenAI on Monday said it was working on temporarily muting a synthetic voice that sounds a lot like the actress Scarlett Johansson.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey there. It's going great. How about you? I see you're rocking an OpenAI hoodie. Nice choice. What's up with that ceiling, though? Are you in a cool industry-style office or something?
The artificial intelligence powerhouse said in a blog post that the Sky voice at issue was based on the natural speaking voice of a different professional actress and not meant to sound like Johansson. And finally, low-salt diets are so much more healthy for you. But you know, salt tastes so good. So a company in Japan has invented a spoon that they claim makes low-salt food taste saltier. Reuters correspondent Ilan Rubens dishes up the info.
This electric salt spoon can apparently enhance salty tastes. Researchers hope it can help users cut down on sodium consumption and promote a healthier diet. Developed by Japanese drinks giants Kirin Holdings, the utensil works by passing a weak electric field to concentrate the sodium ion molecules on the tongue. This enhances the perceived saltiness of the food. Weighing 60 grams, the spoon runs on a rechargeable lithium battery. Meiji University professor Home Miyashita co-developed the utensil.
When you're eating low-salt food, some of that sodium comes into contact with your tongue, but not all. So we use an electric current to attract the sodium to the tongue. Once you do that, lots of sodium is drawn to the tongue and gives the impression of a saltier flavor.
Excess sodium intake is related to increased incidence of high blood pressure, strokes, and other ailments. Kirin says the technology has particular significance in Japan, where the average adult consumes about 10 grams of salt per day. That's double the amount recommended by the World Health Organization. Ai Sato is a researcher at Kirin.
Overall, Japanese people need to reduce their salt intake, but it can be very hard to change the diet we're used to. We created this electric salt tool so they can adjust their salt intake and get used to lighter-tasting meals.
Kirin plans to sell 200 of its electric salt spoons online for roughly $127 a piece in May and a limited run at a Japanese retailer in June. The company is hoping for 1 million users globally within 5 years. Sales overseas will start in 2025.
Reuters correspondent Dylan Rubens. Bon appetit. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform. Download our app from Google and Apple. And follow us online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walter.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The future of Europe, and in many ways the future of the world, depends on the continued bravery and tenacity of the Ukrainian people. We know this, which is why the United States and democratic allies around the world continue to stand in support of our Ukrainian partners, said United States Agency for International Development Deputy Administrator Isabel Coleman in her keynote address at the Kyiv Investment Forum. As part of his brutal and illegal war against Ukraine, Vladimir Putin is targeting not only its people, he is also attempting to destroy the country's economy. The United States is, of course, providing weapons and support that Ukraine needs to stay in the fight, said Deputy Administrator Coleman. But the United States is also looking ahead to Ukraine's post-war future. Working through USAID, the United States is investing in Ukraine and its people. One key to Ukraine's recovery will be a robust, growing, and vibrant private sector, and an economy that creates jobs, increases exports, and generates tax revenues, said Deputy Administrator Coleman. As the Russian military attempts to destroy a portion of Ukraine's economy that helps feed the world, USAID is working with businesses to get Ukraine's farmers the seeds and fertilizer, grain storage facilities, and safe export routes that they need to grow and sell their food. Russia is attacking the country's farmland and agricultural export infrastructure. On May 1st, Deputy Administrator Coleman announced an additional $60 million to help mitigate the impact of Russia's war on agricultural production in Ukraine and accelerate Ukraine's economic recovery. A plentiful supply of energy is essential to a well-functioning economy. Putin knows that, and so is attempting to weaponize that fact by targeting Ukraine's electrical grid and its heating systems, said Deputy Administrator Coleman. USAID will provide more than $190 million to the Securing Power, Advancing Resilience and Connectivity Project, which will provide urgently needed energy assistance to the government of Ukraine over 5 years. These funds are in addition to the nearly $1 billion the United States has already provided to Ukraine to keep its lights on and its heat running. The United States has a single goal, to enable Ukraine not only to win the war, but to win the future, said Deputy Administrator Coleman. We desire and have confidence that we will see a future Ukraine defined by the prosperity and dignity only a strong and resilient economy can provide.
That was an editorial reflecting the view